tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. Great to see you guys. We have a lot going on. And before we dive into the talk, I just want to make sure that everyone is on the same page. Because the next couple weeks, with the holidays and with everything that you've got going on in your personal life, I want to make sure that you don't miss what's happening around here. I cannot believe this, but we are less than a week away from Christmas Eve. And so next Saturday, we will be having two services at 1 and 3. And if Next Level is your church, if Next Level is not your church, ignore what I'm about to say. But if Next Level is your church, would you help us out by committing for the final week leading up to Christmas Eve? Would you commit to just to the 111 challenge? It's a simple challenge that at 1 p.m., pray for one person for 1 minute. And I've got a reminder on my phone that comes up every day that just reminds me of this. And we are less than a week away. And so from Monday through Saturday, would you commit just to pray? And so here's some things you can pray for specifically. You can pray for our staff as we're getting ready for these big services. You can pray for one another. And you can spend a few seconds just praying for who you are going to invite to come with you to the Christmas Eve services. So if you would do that, that would be awesome. Speaking of Christmas Eve, we do have some key volunteers who are traveling. Our area is a very heavy military area, and so there are a lot of people who this isn't their home, and so they travel out during Christmas Eve. And because of that, we have a few spots available on Christmas Eve to volunteer. So if Next Level is your church and you want to give back, we have an opportunity for you to join the team just for 1 week. That's it, just 1 week, for 1 hour. You'd volunteer for 1 hour, you go to the service the next hour, and then you'll be done. And so if you're available for that, if you're feeling led to do that, we'll have a clipboard. It's up here at the front of the stage, and you can sign away to the few remaining positions that we have open. A couple other real just quick things. Christmas Day, we do not have services. So Christmas Eve, we have services. Christmas Day, we don't have services here. We are providing an online experience for you. So still block out some point in your Christmas Day to do church with your family. It just won't be here at the building. It'll be an online experience. And it's about 15, 20 minutes long, and so it'll be, it's interactive and a chance for you to connect and to hear a message and to sing some songs. And it'll be a great way for you to get your family together around Christmas. So make sure you don't forget that. It's coming up on Christmas. And then the following week, New Year's Day, we do have services. And you just heard that announcement. We're wearing our PJs. The one disclaimer that I want to give here, okay? If you don't wear PJs at night, buy some before you show up to church, okay? All right, and if you're PJs, if you're a female, let's just keep Victoria's secret, okay? You need very appropriate PJs as you come, okay? This is, or don't, and we'll just have something to talk about. Like, I'll just leave it up to you. You do you. All right, well, I'm so excited for you guys to be here today. We are concluding a series, and I'd love for you to get a little something more out of it than just sitting there and listening. One way we do that is to challenge you to get the app, YouVersion. And on the YouVersion app, there's an event page where you can log in, you can sign up, and you can take some notes in there, which I highly recommend. There's also a free poll that's a little bit of fun, and there's some other announcements and some things in there as well. So if you're a regular attender, go ahead and open that up. If you're a first-time visitor, I'd love for you to take a chance and check out YouVersion. Today, we are concluding a series, and the series, we get the title for this series, What the Flip, because we've been going through a letter called Philippians. And so it's a little bit of a play on words, what the flip from Philippians. And one of the main reasons, though, is the letter that was written to the church in Philippi that we call Philippians, it doesn't fully make sense. If you were just to kind of read through this letter and not know the circumstances around the letter, you would just say, well, this guy's he's a motivational speaker, he's encouraging, he's just positive. He's the type of guy that sees the glass as being half full. But then when you learn about the circumstances of the author and the guy who wrote this letter to Philippians, it brings the letter to a whole new light. And for those of you that have been here throughout this series, would you help me catch everyone else up to speed? When Paul, the author of Philippians, wrote the letter to the church in Philippi, where was he at? Prison, jail, right? He was in a Roman prison, attached to a Roman guard in a deep, dark pit, a hole in the ground, and yet he writes this letter and he talks about things like having joy, and he talks about these amazing thoughts that he has, and it's an encouraging letter. And when you match his circumstances with the words that he wrote, it literally will make you say, what the flip? This, it doesn't make sense. Like, how can someone be so positive in such a bad circumstance? And I don't know about you, but I want some more of that in my life. I would love it because I can't avoid every bad circumstance and I can't avoid every bad situation and I can't control everything that happens to me. So I would love it if in the midst of difficult circumstances, I could have the same mindset that Paul had. So we're going to conclude the letter today and we're going to dive in and I'm just going to ask that you would help me out by standing to your feet and we're going to read this text together to make sure we're all on the same page. This comes from Philippians 4, 8 through 9. If you would humor me and read it nice and loud like you're awake and alive, it says, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you." Now that we've read the text, let's spend a few moments just praying and talking to God. Would you guys pray with me? God, we come before you right now. And you know our hearts, you know our minds. You know that this is a stressful season for a lot of us. There's a lot of extra things that we have to do. And God, you also know our circumstances. For some of us, God, the holidays are hard because it brings up hard memories. It brings up reminders of loss and pain. And so, God, we're just asking in the next few moments, God, not that you fix all of our problems, but, God, that you would just give us more of you. We ask that you would speak to our hearts, God, that you would help us to know what you're saying and what we're supposed to do in the midst of our pain, in the midst of our stress and trouble. And God, I just ask that you would just hold us, that you would comfort us, and that you would give us the courage to obey you no matter how difficult it is. And God, I just pray that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh, Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. I want you to look at your neighbor and say to them, "Practice makes perfect." Now, I want you to look to the other neighbor that you didn't choose, that you were so rude and you ignored. I want you to look to the other neighbor and say, "Practice." No, you're saying something different. You're saying something different. All right? The friend that you ignored, what I want you to say to them is, "Practice." We're talking about practice. Okay, now you can say it. Practice is not something that is very, for lack of a better word, sexy. Practice is not something that is like something that we enjoy. It's not something that we look forward to. Practice is not something that we're like, "Oh yeah, I can't wait to practice." In fact, a lot of us, when we think about practice, it kind of seems annoying. It seems like a burden. It seems like one more thing for us to do. And I don't know if you are around my age or if you watch the NBA, but if you watch the NBA in the 90s and you hear the word practice, there is a press conference that you can't help but think about. In the 90s, there was an athlete from our area, arguably the greatest athlete to ever come out of the 757. His name is Allen Iverson. When he lived here, he went to Bethel High School. He graduated a year earlier than I did from high school. He was a two-sport athlete. He won the state championship in football, then turned around and won the state championship in basketball. He was an incredible athlete. When he lived here, he went by the name of Bubba Chuck. He used to go to the Chick-fil-A in the Hampton Coliseum Mall, and he would order the char-grilled sandwich with bacon and tomato. I know that because my friend waited on him almost every day after practice. Well, Allen Iverson makes it big. He gets into the NBA. He's the number one draft pick, and he literally is responsible for changing the image of the game. He brought some street and brought some hood cred to the NBA, and he was the first one with tattoos, and now the NBA, like, it literally has been influenced. There's a whole documentary on it, which is fabulous. It's on 30 for 30, and it features Hampton. It's an incredible documentary, but it's about how Allen Iverson, he's changed so much of what we've seen. But if you're not familiar with how great Allen Iverson is, you probably remember in the 90s he got into a little bit of trouble because he skipped practice, and one of the reporters asked him about it, and this quote is something that is just stuck in my head. Whenever I hear the word practice, I think about Allen Iverson. Now, some of you are looking at me like, "You don't have a fat clue what I'm talking about," and so I want to catch everyone up to speed. Here's a clip of the very famous Allen Iverson press conference. Check it out.
"Giants player, and we're in here talking about practice. I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we're talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice? We're talking about practice."
So today, we're talking about practice. Now, practice is literally something that I think most of us would kind of relate to Allen Iverson. And we'd say, come on, why are we talking about practice? Like, it's not a game, not a game. We're talking about practice. Why is practice so important? Well, I would say that the thing that separates anyone that is great at something is their ability to put in the hard work of practice. And Allen Iverson, as great of an athlete as he was, and as much of a mark as he let on the NBA, nobody considers him to be the greatest player in the NBA. And I want to say the difference between Allen Iverson and Michael Jordan is not their God-given talent, it's their ability to practice. There are stories about Michael Jordan, and he's the greatest athlete, the greatest NBA player, some would say the greatest in the history of all sports, and there is legends about how much practice Michael Jordan put into the gym. He was the first to the gym, and he was the last to leave. Allen Iverson, in my opinion, had way more God-given talent than one of my favorite basketball players, Kobe Bryant. But nobody would put Allen Iverson on a list higher than Kobe Bryant. Why? Because Kobe Bryant was a practice machine. There's a story of one time when Kobe Bryant was playing in the Olympics, and he didn't play that well in a game. And after the game, it was you think about how long, a couple hours of a basketball game where he started and had a lot of minutes. And after the game, because he was frustrated with his performance, he decided to go out and practice after the game. And he's practicing threes, and he's shooting, and he's practicing for hours. And another player catches this and says, hey, I'll practice with Kobe, I'll learn from him. And he practices, and he said that he was so tired and so worn out from the practice after the game, that after a couple hours, he just said, hey, Kobe, I gotta go. I'm done. Like, I'm just dying. The player leaves, goes home, gets a good night's sleep, comes back the next morning for practice. When he shows up the next morning, Kobe Bryant is already there. And he says, I don't know how you have so much energy. You were the last one to leave, and you're the first one here today. And Kobe Bryant looks at him and says, I didn't leave. I've been shooting all night long. Why? Because Kobe Bryant knew the value practice. Malcolm Gladwell is an author that writes some incredible books, and he wrote a book called Outlier. And in Malcolm Gladwell's book, he says that it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert at anything. 10,000 hours to become an expert at anything. He goes on to say that it doesn't matter whether it's athletics or academics. According to Gladwell, there are no naturals. There is nobody that is born to be the best at something. If you're the best at something, if you're an expert, it's because you've put in practice. You have to put in the time. Generally speaking, Gladwell says, the only difference between an elite person in any field and everybody else is usually a few thousand hours of practice time. Now, we like to say things like they have God-given ability, they have God-given talent. That's just how they are. But what if the thing that separates you from the person you want to be is practice? We want it to come natural. We want God just to kind of infuse it on us. We want to be great at things. But the difference between you and who you want to be is literally practice. When you talk about spiritual things, if you show me someone who can pray amazing prayers out loud in public, I will show you someone who has put in hours of prayer in private with practice. Show me someone who has amazing faith in God and is taking big steps of faith, and I will show you someone who has taken little tiny steps of faith behind the scenes when no one else is watching. Why? Because practice makes perfect. It's about the practice. We're talking about practice? Not a game, not a game. Practice. You show me someone who is stressed with life but yet doesn't fall apart, and I will show you someone who has gone to God in the good times. You practice your relationship with God. You practice spiritual disciplines. You practice doing what you're supposed to do. And when life gets hard, when the game hits you, you do what you're supposed to do. But most of us aren't prepared for that. And most of us aren't prepared because of a lack of practice. Now, the reason I think that practice is so important is because I think there's a disconnect between who we are and who we portray to other people. And most of us, we portray to other people that we're happy, that we've got our lives together, that we love our job, we love our family. We portray that everything is great. But we know, if we're honest with ourselves, we've got some issues going on in here. And one of the biggest problems with us as human beings is that when someone talks to us or gives us inspiration or challenges us, we think about who others see us as. But the way that others see us is this fake self that we put out there. It's this thing that we have to work really hard at to get other people to see us. And very few of us do the hard work of analyzing who we really truly are. I read this fascinating article this week about kids, and I don't know if you can relate to this or not, but if you have kids, the article was about how our kids often act way better for other people than they do for us. And I don't know if you've experienced that. Maybe your kids are the same person at school as they are at home. God bless you if that's the case. But oftentimes, what we'll hear from the babysitter is, your kids were angels, your kids were so great, they never fight, they get along, they're so... And we're like, what kids did you watch? Because we see a different side of our kids. And the article went on to point out that if you see a different side of your kids, it's actually a good thing that your kids feel safe around you. And because they feel safe around you, what you are experiencing is your children's true self. Now, what do we think? We think our true self is the public persona, but it's not. It's not true with our kids, and it's not true with us. Our true self is how we are when no one is looking. Our true self is how we are when we're with our family, when we feel safe to be ourselves. All of us have thoughts that go through our minds that we don't say out loud in public. But in private or around your family, you're a lot less guarded. Don't raise your hand, but how many of you have a phone voice? You know what a phone voice is? It's... you're yelling, you're screaming at your kids, you're yelling at your spouse, you are angry, and the phone rings, and it's like, why did you do that? Pick up your room. Hello? There's a disconnect. There's a disconnect between who you think others think you are and who you want to be and who you actually are. And stress brings out the worst in us. We can pretend to be really confident. We can pretend to be happy all the time. We can pretend that we're calm, cool, and collective. But when we feel stress, our true selves come out. And when our true selves come out, we can't hide it around anyone, including strangers. And oftentimes, we feel stress simply because we are put into a new environment. And I see this all the time, that I see couples who love each other and couples who are madly in love. When it comes time for their wedding day, they are so stressed, it's like they are pointing out to everyone, this marriage may not make it. Like, they are screaming at each other, they are yelling, they are stressed. Why? Because their bodies aren't used to the stress of putting on a wedding ceremony. And the stress brings out their true self. I know for myself, the very first wedding that I did, as a pastor, I've done a lot of weddings, and the first wedding I did, I was a nervous wreck. I was so scared that I was going to mispronounce their name or say a name wrong. Like, I was sweating bullets. Like, I was just filled with anxiety. It was stressful because it was my first wedding. But today I've done over 50 weddings, and so, like, I don't even think about the stress. Like, I just kind of show up and do my deal, and I'm like, man, this is easy. This isn't a problem. But what's the difference between the stressful first wedding and not being stressed today? It is practice. For so many of us, the reason that we feel stressed during the holidays is because we're not practicing these environments that we're about to put ourselves in. You don't practice having your family over for dinner, the stressful uncle and aunt that you know is going to bring up politics in the middle of Christmas dinner. You don't practice that. You don't practice sitting in traffic because everyone's out shopping, and you don't practice the stress of having to get everything done in your Christmas list. And so you added with all this stress, and all of a sudden your true self comes out. And when your true self comes out, it is often really ugly, because who we think we are is not who we really are. And we can see it with our kids, but the truth is we're pretty close to that ourselves. We've got some issues. We've got some things to work out. And our text for today, we're going to break it down, because our text for the day, it is Paul talking about some ways that we can control these stressful environments that we're in. It's Paul. He is letting us know that he's sitting in a Roman prison, and yet he's not freaking out, because this is what he does. And he's challenging us and encouraging us to do the exact same thing. So let's break down our text now. Philippians 4:8. We're going to start there. He says, finally, brothers. He says finally because he's wrapping up this letter. He's getting near the end of it. He says, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Some of you need to tattoo this verse on your body. Some of you need to write out this verse and put it on the dashboard of your car. Some of you need to write it on the mirror in your bathroom and write it out. Some of you need to have this verse memorized and think about it
often, because here's the truth of the matter. The truth of the matter is you cannot stop bad things from happening to you. We live in a fallen, broken world. You cannot control other people. You can't control what other people are going to say, what other people are going to do. You can't control all the stress that you're going to be in during the Christmas season. The only thing that you can control is yourself. And Paul says, finally, brothers and sisters, here's some things to think about. Here's some things to practice. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Now, I don't know if Paul knew the science of how the mind works, but Paul wrote this letter over about 2,000 years ago, and I think this letter, it had to have been impressed on him by God, because it speaks to the very opposite of how we are wired as human beings. And since then, science has looked into the human brain and has figured out how we are wired. And the human brain is literally wired to focus on the negative. It is fascinating. There was some research that I read this week by Dr. Rick Hansen. He says the negative stimuli produce more neural activity than do equally intense positive ones. They are also perceived more easily and quickly. He goes on to say the alarm bell of your brain, and this is a word that I don't know how to say, so I'm probably butchering it, but the amygdala, like you said. He points out that you've got two of these, and I want to show you an image of this in the brain, that this is something, this is how your brain works. We have an image, it's going to come up on the screen. You, that little highlighted thing, you've got two of these in your brain, and he talks about that. He says that you have one on either side of your head, and it uses about two-thirds of its neurons to look for bad news. It's primed to go negative. There's literally something in our brains that is looking for negative things. It's negative perceptions. And once it sounds an alarm, negative events and experiences get quickly stored in memory. In contrast, positive events and experiences, they usually need to be held in awareness for a dozen or more seconds to transform from short-term memory to long-term storage. Let me put this in layman's terms. The brain is like Velcro for negative thoughts and Teflon for positive thoughts. That literally the way that the human brain is wired is that one negative thing happens, you don't have to spend time thinking about it, it sticks to you. But something positive happens, in order for you to be changed by that positive environment, you have to spend time thinking about it and dwelling on it and storing it and replaying it over and over again. This is why you could have an amazing day, but one stressful event happens, and when you get home, what do you say about your day? It was awful. My day was so bad. Well, you had 90 amazing things that happened in your day, but your brain focuses on the one negative thing. It is the way the human brain is wired, and I would say, from a Christian perspective, this isn't the way that God intended our brains to be. This is the way our brains have developed since the fall of man. We are in a fallen, broken world where now, instead of seeing the world through a positive light, we literally hold on to negative experiences. It's why if one person compliments you, you might say, okay, great, thank you. But if one person goes negative on you, that leaves a mark on you for the rest of your life. It takes over and over positive experiences for it to click in, because literally our brain is not holding on to the good, it is holding on to the negative. And so think about your stressful environments and your stressful events. You might have an amazing Christmas, but next year you are not going to remember what you got for Christmas this year. What you will remember is if something bad went happen this year. You'll remember if you burnt the turkey, or if someone ruined Christmas dinner, or if you didn't get what you wanted for Christmas. You will remember a negative thought, but you will not remember a positive thought. That is the way the human brain is wired. And so for so many of us, we are walking around allowing ourselves to be stressed because we are not practicing positive thinking. Paul gives us this list, and he says, listen, if your brain is wired to go negative, if your brain is wired to think about the worst, here are seven things that I would challenge you to think about. Think about this instead. Think about whatever is true. Now, this is incredibly important because the negativity bias that we all have, it constantly lies to us. And I experience this all the time. Someone will come to me and they will say, everybody at the church is complaining about this. And they unload this, like they've talked to everyone in the church. and they've done a poll, and 100% of us are complaining about the same thing. And often I would hear that and I would panic and I would say, oh man, everything's falling apart, everyone's complaining, everyone's mad. And then I would talk to someone else and they're like, no, I didn't even think about that. So now I've developed a question. And when someone comes to me sounding the alarms and says, everyone hated that, everyone's worked up, everyone's freaking out, I ask them what the truth is. And what is the truth? I just simply say to them, who specifically is everyone? Oh, it's just Bubba. Okay. Well, Bubba's always negative. Like, Bubba doesn't like anything. So I can deal with Bubba going negative, but you just presented it to me as everyone hates it. Isn't that what we do when it comes to negativity? Everyone, that was the worst day ever. Well, what happened? Well, I got stuck in traffic for 5 minutes. That's the worst day ever? I've got so much to do. I feel so stressed. I just can't get it all done. Well, what do you have to do? Well, I got about an hour's worth of work. Our brains lie to us and hold on to the negative and focus on the negative. And Paul says, listen, you've got to battle against that and think about what is true. What is true? And oftentimes we've got to convince ourselves out loud, what is truth? The truth is not everyone is mad at us. The truth is it wasn't that bad of a day. The truth is it might have stunk in that moment, but there's some other great things that I can pull from. I'm going to choose to think about truth. How do you do this? You've got to practice. Paul goes on to say, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is admirable, whatever is excellent, whatever is praiseworthy, these are the things that you've got to train yourself to think about. And you've got to practice these things, not when life gets stressful. You've got to practice these things daily so that when life does get stressful, you have an answer to it. And the reason that Michael Jordan did not freak out at the end of a game is because he put in hours and hours and hours of what? Practice. Think about how you and I would experience that. If you have the ball in your hand and there's 5 seconds left and you're down by 2 points, I would have a panic attack. I would just lay down on the court and in the fetal position and say, hold me! But Michael Jordan took that shot, didn't he? He wasn't afraid. Why? Because he put in the practice. And for some of you, the reason why you experience all sorts of anxiety and stress and worry is because you're not putting in the time practicing by thinking about what is true, noble, right, pure, admirable, excellent, or praiseworthy. You've got to practice this. And so when someone comes to you with some negative news, when someone paints a picture to you, you have a choice. You can say, okay, I'm going to take on your negative news. I'm going to listen to what you said, and I'm going to hold that burden, or I'm going to get to the truth of the matter. Who's saying this? Why is this such a big deal? That's not my story. I'm not going to allow other people's negativity to become a part of my story. And when I experience negativity myself, instead of allowing my brain to hold on to what's wrong, I'm going to choose to think about whatever is true, whatever is right, whatever is admirable, whatever is pure. If it is excellent or praiseworthy, I'm going to think about such things. Now, because our brains are wired to go negative, some of you have to make the hard choice, and you've got to cut off the negative things that you are allowing into your life. Because if practice makes perfect, just think about the things that we allow our eyes to see and our ears to hear. And for some of us, we watch a lot of news, which is constantly filled with the negative, with the bad. And for some of you, you cannot handle that. And maybe the reason you're so stressed out and you're so anxious and you're so worried is because you are constantly practicing, listening to, and thinking about things that are negative. And we've got to, sometimes literally, you've got to turn off the TV and say, I just can't handle it. I need to go spend some time thinking about what is true, what is right, what is pure, what is lovely, what is admirable, if it's excellent. Is this TV show that I'm watching, is it praiseworthy? It's not just can you handle it. It's not just is it bad, is it good. What is its effect on me long term? And if you're a person who doesn't handle stress very well and doesn't handle negativity very well, start looking at what you're allowing to feed your mind and your heart. Because look at what Paul says next. Paul goes on to say in Philippians 4:9, whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into, and the God of peace will be with you. Did you catch what Paul just said? When does the God of peace, when is he with you? When you put it into practice. Now, how does most of us work? Like, right? Most of us, when it comes to prayer, We don't spend a lot of time praying. We forget to pray. We get busy. We don't pray. When it comes to reading the Bible, we're like, yeah, I should read my Bible, but we forget to do that. We forget to practice these spiritual disciplines. And then when our world falls apart, we cry out to God and we say, God, fix this right now. But the peace of God doesn't come when you instantly cry out to God in the midst of being in a Roman prison. The peace of God comes when you've been practicing the peace of God in the good times. And you practice it, and Paul says, the God of peace will be with you. Put it into practice. So literally, you've got to find a way to change the way that you view the world. And when something bad happens to you, and your spouse, if you're married, and you come home and they say, how was your day? Instead of unloading to them the one bad thing that happened, you've got to practice by unloading on them the 10 good things that happened. And when something good does happen to you, instead of just letting that pass by and say, oh, I'll remember that, you've got to spend time thinking about that. Why was that good? How did that make me feel? I'm going to allow that thought to dominate my day. God provided a great thing. I'm going to choose to think about that. Whatever's true, whatever's noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, if it's admirable, if it's excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Put that into practice. For years, I said out loud, I don't run. Not I can't run, I just would say I don't run. In fact, I would often tell people, if you ever see me running, please pick me up because someone is chasing me. That is the only reason, that's the only reason I will run. I hated running with a fiery passion. I hated running. But then we planted a church, and I didn't have an income for a few weeks, and we moved in, sold our house, moved in with my parents, and we had to cut anything that was extra. And so one of the first things that we cut was our membership to the YMCA. So I all of a sudden didn't have a gym to go to. I didn't have a way to work out, but I knew I needed to exercise because exercise helps release stress, and it helps me at least think about the good things and the positive things and get some of this negativity out of my life. So I knew I needed to exercise, and I don't own any weight. So I'm like, I've got to run. I don't want to run. I've got to run. So I went outside one day and I said, I'm going to run a mile. I got about a quarter of a mile down, and like my heart was in my throat. Like I was about on my third heart attack when I was just like, this is awful. Why do people do this? But then I had to walk the rest of the mile and get home because I just couldn't do it. But then the next day I said, okay, I've got to exercise. So I went out and I ran. And the next day I could go a little bit further. And then I know how I am. I know that I'll often stick to something for a short term, but then I'll forget about it and get sidetracked. And I knew I needed to run. And so I was like, if I sign up for a race, it's going to force me to keep practicing. So I signed up for a turkey trot on Thanksgiving Day, thinking it would be awesome. I will run and then I can eat whatever I want, right? Doesn't work that way, but I wish it did. So I signed up for this turkey trot. It's a 5K, and I knew I needed some accountability, so I asked my younger brother if he would run this thing with me. Well, my younger brother, he was in cross country, he was in track, and so he was like, yeah, I'll run it. And I was like, well, when are you going to train? He's like, I'm not. I'm just going to show up and do it. And I'm like, I can't do that. I will die. And so I practiced running for this 5K. I ran over and over and over again. I ran when I didn't feel like it. I ran in the rain. I ran when it got cold out. I ran and I ran and I ran. And when it came time for the 5K, I made a huge, massive mistake. I woke up extra early that morning, and I had a bowl of Frosted Flakes. Why? Because they're great. Start running this 5K, and not even a quarter mile in, I get this awful cramp in my side, and I want to quit, and it's bad. And the pain, if you would have just rewinded a few months ago, the pain would have been enough for me to say, I'm done, I'm not running this race. But I had practiced. I ran through hard times. I ran through the rain. I ran through the snow. I ran when it was hot outside. I ran, and so the cramp, it was like, oh, I got to press through. I can do this. Well, my brother, because he has cross-country and track practice, even though he didn't train for this, he was a little bit faster than I was, and I ran in front of him, and at some point on this 5K run, he stepped in dog poo. And he was just far enough in front of me that every time he would step up, I would smell the dog poo. So I got dog poo coming in my nose, and I got a cramp on my side. But I never thought about quitting. And sometimes in life, you can't control what happens to you, but sometimes in life, the poo hits the fan. And sometimes in life, you're like, I'm doing my best. I'm running for God. I'm trying to live right. I'm trying to do what I want to do. And you can't control your circumstances, and you get a pain, and you get some hurt. And in that moment, you're going to say, I just quit. I'm done. Unless you practice. Because you practice doing these things in the good times. When the bad times happen, you're just like, man, this is just another thing. I'm going to keep pressing on. I'm going to keep running. I got done with that 5K. Something clicked in my brain and said, I can do more. I then signed up for a 10K. Running the 10K, I ran with my friend Ryan. And as we were running it, he was like, I want to challenge myself to do a half marathon. I said, you are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. No human should run that much. But I got done with the race and I said, you know what? Why am I saying I can't do that? I know I can run. I can't run a half marathon in this moment, but I know I can do it if I do what? Practice. So I ran. I ran like a machine. I ran so much that my big toe got black and blue and my toenail almost exploded. Yeah, it was beautiful. When I got to my first half marathon, it was in the Outer Banks, and it rained cats and dogs. It rained hard. It was miserable for a lot of people, but it didn't stop me from running the half marathon. Why? Because I put in the time to practice. And if you want stressful times to be easier, it doesn't come from just God putting a miracle in you and taking you out of the situation, because sometimes God allows you to sit in a Roman prison. And it's not your choice, it's not what you want, but the way that you behave and the way that you think in that moment is the difference between being really free and being stuck in the prison. Because someone may hurt you, someone may cut you off, someone may not get you what you want for Christmas, someone may be selfish. It is not up to you to control other people, it is only up to you to control yourself. And how do you control yourself in moments of stress? You've got to what? Practice. Whatever is true, whatever is right, whatever is pure, if it's lovely, if it's admirable, if it's excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Put them in to practice. I love the quote by Stephen Furtick. He's a pastor in Charlotte, North Carolina. He says, your capacity will never increase in your comfort zone. Your capacity will never increase in your comfort zone. And for some of us, the reason we're not increasing in our faith is because we're stuck in our comfort zone and we're not willing to practice and push ourselves through. For some of us, the reason why life is so hard is because we're not willing to push through and say, I can do this. If you're a Christian, God's given you everything you need to live the godly life, but you got to put it into practice. Here's the application for today. This week, practice finding something positive when your brain wants to latch onto something negative. Practice it. Literally this week, someone cuts you off in traffic, you want to go negative on them, practice it. Take that thought captive. No, I'm going to find a way to be positive. At least they didn't hit my car. At least I'm still alive. When you're stressed out because all you have to do, say, hey, at least I'm not bedridden. At least I can get out of my bed. I'm going to think about something that's true. When you get mad at your kids and you want to fuss at them because they're not in school all day long and they're home on Christmas break, you better put in some practice. 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 How different would your week be? How different would Christmas be if you practice finding something positive when your brain wants to latch on to something negative? I would say if Paul can find something positive in a Roman prison, you can too, if you're willing to do what? Will you pray with me? God, thanks for this day. Thank you for your love for us. Thank you for, God, how you allow our brains to grow and how you allow our hearts to grow. And God, for some of us, we are really stressed during this season. We feel like we have to do it all. We feel like we don't have support. And for some of us, God, there's just this sadness that comes around us because of family members we've lost or friendships we've lost. And God, we're just asking right now, God, would you give us the strength? Would you give us the courage? Would you give us the drive and the ability to do what we're supposed to do? This week, God, would you help us to take every thought captive in the name of Jesus and make it obedient to you? God, we can't help when we get stressed. We can't help what other people do, but we can control ourselves. So God, would you just remind us, God, would you help us to be disciplined? For some of us, God, would you help us to write it out, to make a poster, to put it in our car, to put it on a mirror? Would you help us to think about whatever is true, whatever is lovely, whatever is right, whatever is pure, if it's excellent or praiseworthy? God, would you help us to memorize that, to think about it, to chew on it? Would you help us to practice in the good times? So so we can make it in the difficult times. Thank you for what you're doing in our hearts and our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.